Yeah,
you were carefully trying to avoid them, and then you called.
You know exactly what it is.
And it's not just her.
It's a great presentation. I just like the top.
Is the number one reason? Of course, we all know that, but hearing it from them, and she was because she's very clear.
It definitely was.
You're going to rely on special effects.
Supervisor Kubecki?
Yeah. Oh, that's good. And, but then there's credibility to it.
Alright, 6 o'clock, we'll start the meeting.
That's true.
Roll call, please.
Jeff Gantz.
Here.
Ron Frederick.
Here.
Ed Kubicki.
Here.
David Celebre.
Here.
John Finkel.
Here.
Monica Juhas.
Here.
Jeff Wamble.
Here.
John Cargill.
Here.
Carly Royce.
Here.
Everybody present? Thank you all for coming. Thank the supervisors for coming and staff and the guests that we have tonight. Thank you all for coming. We'll start with the library system.
Hello, everybody. I'm Barb Bratton. I'm the director of the Kenosha County Library System, and that is why I'm here. The system is distinct from the libraries that it serves. So in Kenosha County, we have community library, and that has two branches, one in Twin Lakes and one in Salem Lakes. And it has, its funding is provided by Paddock Lake, Randolph, Twin Lakes, and Salem Lakes. And those four entities provide money directly to the library. Kenosha Public Library, which I also am the director of, is a city library, we're a city department, and we're completely funded by the city. What the system does is it is a state mandated entity in Chapter 43, and what it does is it makes sure that every citizen in Wisconsin can have equal library service, even if they don't pay directly to a library. And so what we do is we provide not only access to every citizen by equalizing the county and the state, but we also provide all the technology. So these systems were started in 1981 when access meant you could come in and check out a book or attend a story time. But you know, libraries are so much more now with all the digital things that we do, all the public computing that we do and all of that. So the system also provides the money for all the internet access and the digital stuff that are in our libraries. And so the system money comes from the state, and then it also comes from reimbursements through the county. And the county, if you live in the county and you don't pay directly to a library like those five municipalities that I listed, then you pay a county tax instead. And that's what we're here today to talk about. So those are the two revenues that we get. We also get reimbursed from Racine and Walworth County for the service that we do for their residents. So if you live in the city of Racine, you can use any of the libraries in Kenosha County, and then Racine and Walworth counties can pay us back for that as well. So you see that in our budget as well. Your county executive assigns who's on our board. So everyone that is represented on our library board is seven members, and by statute, one of them has to be a county supervisor, and Boyd Frederick is our representative right now. So if you look at our budget, it is based on calculations. So those reimbursements I was talking about, those are all a formula that is described in Chapter 43. You break it down into the contractual and into the supplies. So in the contractual, the accounting and auditing, that's our portion of your audit, your annual audit. The data processing costs are broken down into things like the internet access, all the shared databases, the system-wide county network that runs all the computer hardware, and software for all the six libraries. There's a new thing this year, a hotspot lending program. As you know, there was the CARES Act, and it was there was a lot of emphasis on getting internet access out to people who were cut off during the pandemic. So we got money from the federal government to get hotspots for checkout, and we got 1 year of the data plans, and now those data plans are up. And so we have to fund those going forward. There's 61 of them. But the good news is the libraries give significant discount. So that total is $14,616 for the year. So that is a new expense that we're asking for the county to pay. We did get a bump in our revenue from the state after a lull period of about 8 years, I believe. Where we got nothing extra, so we got a little bit of a bump there.
Any questions from the committee?
Move to approve.
Second.
Been moved by Supervisor Juhas, seconded by Supervisor Frederick to approve. Any further questions before we take the vote? I have one. The resource library service seems to be the biggest jump. What can you tell us about that?
The resource library is the Kenosha Public Library, okay. And that represents how much the business, so to speak, how many of the circulations we did. So we get reimbursed for how many things are checked out, not how much digital things are used or anything like that. So it's that 1981 type of antiquated formula, but that represents the cost.
I like 1981.
You like 1981? I know. But it has its shortcomings in these days because of the digital stuff. But so we don't get reimbursed for any of the use of those electronic things that cost us a considerable amount of money. But those are just a reflection of the number of checkouts.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you
very much.
Public Works, Jim.
Hey, thanks for having us here tonight. We're going to present the 2022 Public Works and Developmental Services budget. You should all have this kind of document. It's passed out electronically to you folks the end of last week. This is exactly the same packet that we did at our committee meeting the other night. No changes, additions. When we talk about this, we've got six or seven different departments within Public Works. I'll talk for a few minutes here just kind of in summary how we fit into the total scope of the county's budget. And then, if it pleases the chairman, we'll go through chunk by chunk, department by department, and we'll start with UW Extension, then go to P&D, and we'll vote on the budget for that department as we go through, so there'll be seven or eight. That's typically what we do. As long as you want to do that tonight, we'll do the same thing.
That's what we're doing.
Okay. So the first page, the top part, our budget's divided into two really big chunks. There's the operating part, and then there's the capital part. On the operation side, the first little box up on top of the page there, Mary's got that up there. Our operations budget compared 21 to 22. On the revenue side, non-levy revenue is going up 3.5%, $464,000. Our levy is going up $242,000, 2.9%. On the expense side, most of our increase in expenses is in personnel, and we'll get into some personnel stuff as we go department by department. Division by division within a department. The other expense increases in the Public Works operating budget is 1%. So when it comes to the capital spending budget, The total capital budget for this year, for next year, is $62 million. Public Works is responsible for $56 million, or 90% of that budget. The bonding side, the bonding budget is almost $26 million, and Public Works is 82% of that. On the levy side, we are asking for a levy of almost $8.6 million. That's 11.8% of the total. I think that's the non-library levy number, that $72
million. Correct.
So we're usually around 12%. And we were asked to report on how much of our 2022 budget is ARPA funded. We have three areas, and the only thing that's going into operations for ARPA money is $90,000. But there's $4.5 million of ARPA funds that'll be used next year, $3 million for Highway S, and $1.5 million for our regular county highway paving project. So we're about $4.6 million in ARPA funding. The bottom box is we usually do a comparison of our full-time equivalents. So from 21 to 22, our full-time equivalents will increase by three. And one is a facilities custodian. Another is a parks special project coordinator. The third is a highway senior engineer. And when we get to each different division, we will talk about the justification for those people. But way, way back, and we put the 2010 numbers on there. So for facilities, in 2010, we were at 32. We've actually been down. So now we're going to bring it back up to 32. We'll explain the need for a new custodian. Golf is actually down full-time from before flat to last year. Parks is up one. Highway is up a couple. And I know... We'll explain what it's the one person is, but we have a year or two ago we added two just highway truck driver laborers because of the increase in mileage and things like that. And planning development is flat. So that's our full-time equivalent story. So that's kind of how we fit in to the whole scope of Kenosha County's budget. Page two is a little report that we do. The top budget, or the top box, is a 2021 budget. And when you look at it, you see the various departments we have. We've got the golf department, we've got the facilities, highway, and then a total. And we break out the income on the top. We show levy separate from any other revenue. And then the four or five major expense categories that every other department reports on. Top box is what the budget was for this year. The middle box is the same information for 2022. We round everything to thousands of dollars. Then when you get to the bottom box, you can see the increase or the decrease in any of those components from 21 up to 22. And that's what we're gonna explain, the major changes, what we're going from in 21 budget up to the 22 budget. So if you have anything that questions you have, this is probably a good place to see where those questions might come
point of
from.
Information.
Sure.
You know, I had this in committee and it took us a little while to get our minds around it, although we've done this, you know, for the past several years. It really is helpful just to understand that this chart reads almost better vertically, top to bottom, than it does across. So, for example, you take golf, you see 2021, 2022 proposed, and then the difference. So, you know, maybe it's obvious to some people, maybe it's not obvious to others, but I thought I'd just bring that forward because that's what came out in our committee.
Any help that can be offered is much appreciated. Thank you.
So as an example, if you go to the facilities column, let's just talk about facilities. There's an expense number there on the top box underneath the facilities column. There's a personnel expense there for $2,399,000. That was the budget for the personnel's category for facilities for this year. If you go down to the next box, kind of located in the same place but on a different box, you'll see personnel of $2,528,000. Then if you go to the bottom box, you go to the personnel underneath facilities, you see $129,000. That's the increase in the facilities budget for personnel from year to year. And we will be explaining these large changes. So hopefully that helps reinforce what Supervisor Graves just said. So is there any kind of questions in the total of how we fit in? If not, we're going to go to UW Extension budget. That's page 3. Now, UW Extension is really not technically a part of the Public Works Department, but yet Ray provides a lot of support for them from management, and then Chris and I do a lot of the bookkeeping, and we do the finances for the UW Extension, but we always try to do this one separate. And there's a new face in the crowd. I don't know how many of you know Terry Ward. She is the new representative from the state. Bev Baker was there before, and then before that we had
Teddy.
Ooh, forget Teddy. So welcome, Terry.
Thank you.
She's been working on the budget. It's baptism by fire.
Yeah.
What did you say? Staring down a fire hose or something?
Trying to make from a fire hose.
Yeah. Yep. With a lot of information is. So I'll run you through their budget, which for UW Extension, they really have three departments within the entirety. The first department is on page 3. That's really their office department. And the biggest number on this page is the other professional services. There is, in this year, there's really no employees at all. We haven't had an actual employee paid by the Kenosha County for a few years. Terry is provided by the state. There's a number there, other professional services. Those are the people that, I don't want to say we rent them, but we pay for their salaries, and they provide a number of services to the county. And if you go to page 5 of that handout. These are the positions that we pay the state for the people for the extension. In 2021, this year, there's 4.6 people. And you can see who the jobs are and what they charge us. And anybody in the state, UW Extension charges the same price. If you have a community development educator and you're up north in one of those counties, you're going to pay that price. You don't necessarily pay the salary that they are paying that person. You pay this flat fee. And then they give us a $10,000 multi-purchase discount at the end, which is really nice of them. So for 2022, there's an increase of really a half body in the 4-H person, excuse me, going from 0.6 of a person to one full-time person. 4-H is the biggest program that UW Extension runs. There's hundreds of kids involved, hundreds of volunteers that help. So the demand is there to have more assistance. So we want to move that from a partial person to a full-time person. And then the state also is not going to reimburse us next year for the professional development expenses. So there's an increase that goes from $187,000 to up to $280,000.
Or $208,000.
So if you flip back to page 3, you will see that number kind of in the middle of the page under other professional services, going from $187,000 to $208,000. And the only other really major increase, we're going to have a part-time seasonal temporary person who, I don't know if you've been out by KCC and you've seen the gardens and the walkway and all the work they've done out there. They've got a path, they've got a shed, they've redone the whole thing. It's beautiful, and a lot of people are starting to come out there, the public, to use it. So we will have this part-time seasonal person who will come in from time to time and do work on that and maintain it. So that's the other increase in the budget. There's no benefits involved with that. So the total increase, they go from about $208,000 to about $231,000. And everything else is pretty much the same in UW Extension from year to year. So that's one of the departments. That's on page 3. In page 4, there's two departments on this page 4. The top part is they hold classes, UW Extension. And there's an expense part, and we have to pay for supplies or materials for these classes, and maybe and some books or anything like that. But we charge it back. So we have there's no levy for this at all. We basically break even. And then the bottom section is the after school program, where UW Extension may or may not provide. I don't think they've done much last year or this year, but we put a budget in there, but it's a levy neutral budget. There is no. If we do spend money, we end up billing it back to whatever, to the Kenosha Unified or to any of the other school systems out in the county. So we have these departments. If we spend the money, we bill it back, no levy. I think that's pretty much it for UW Extension.
Questions from the committee on UW Extension?
Move to approve.
It's been moved by Supervisor Franco. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Supervisor Salaberry. Supervisor Wambolt?
Yeah, the part-time seasonal person, what is the cost to increase that?
$650. It's the salary number on the top of page 3, $6,000 and FICA.
Okay, right. Yeah. No, I wanted him to tell me. Just out of curiosity, I know Ed, I think Kemper does this with volunteers for the grounds, correct?
Yep.
Have you ever considered that? Using volunteers for the gardens and stuff like that versus paying something?
I can speak to some of that. Yeah, so there is actually the Master Gardener program, which has been in place for decades. It's not as robust as it was a few years ago, but they did most of the gardening maintenance at KCC for decades. They aren't doing as much of it, and we've actually, Mike's team worked jointly with UW Extension, the facilities group and UW Extension, to downsize and downscale a lot of stuff. Clean up a lot of stuff that was higher maintenance stuff and install other landscape things that are more, it's to give folks more of an educational experience. So if you take the trail around KCC that's there now, there are trees, all varieties of trees planted, and there's little informational things that are going to be put up that will indicate if somebody's got an interest in this type of landscaping things, get with UW Extension. The horticulturist there will explain sustainable landscaping, blah, 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 and all this kind of stuff. So the long answer to your short question is that this person will do what largely the Master Gardener program did do from a volunteer standpoint. Like I say, those numbers have dropped over the years. So
thank you.
Supervisor Kubicki.
Yeah, Jim, you mentioned that the state's going to stop funding program, they say why or what's
you mean for the $2,500?
Yeah.
I'm not sure why they're taking that away.
Thank you.
I don't think we're going to have to spend any extra though to do it.
Good. Thanks, Jim.
You have a question about the 4-H person. I'm questioning every addition as far as it added personnel. So what is that half a person? I mean, you said there's a lot of kids and then you kind of moved past that. Can you dive into that just for a little bit, please?
How many hundred is, do you know, Terry?
Off the top of my head, it's about 1,000 adult volunteers and about 1,200 youth members in 4-H. And this is mostly west of the eye, the robust programs are, so it's a lot of herding. Of volunteers coordinating various clubs and projects and events for that community development program. I'm new, but as I understand it, historically we've kind of pieced together support for that program, and it's really not enough. It's limping along, and for the 1.0, we can have a dedicated person to serve that huge volunteer group, and it is one of the larger programs in the state.
Larger programs in the state, and we're limping along. What does limping along mean? What's our struggles?
Sure. So, again, I'm relatively new, so I can get more background for you to fill in what I'm not aware of. But some of the challenges are delays in response. Sometimes, you know, we have new projects or new people who want to join, and there's just not enough resources to, you know, get them going or get them connected. So, you know, I'm learning. I don't know a lot yet about the historic parts of 4-H, but we've certainly heard from many volunteers that we need to do better in that area. And just looking at the staffing historically, it's been a struggle.
Okay. Any further questions from the committee? Seeing none, all in favor of that section?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to move on next to planning and development. It's on page 6. And this is a summary page. It's a format we do for pretty much every division within department. So for the P&D division, expenses in 2021, this year's budget are $847,000. Next year they're going up to $908,000, an increase of $61,000. $50,000 of that is in an inspection services program that we hope to start next year. And then if you go down to the revenue section, you will see the $50,000 worth of inspection fee revenue, which offsets that. In as far as personnel goes in the P&D department, there's no increases in headcount, so any of increases in the expenses in the personnel area are just the annual increases in either the salary or changes in the benefits if they went from single to family or something like that. So there's no new bodies. And I'll explain this permitting system. Right now, every municipality in Kenosha County has issues various kind of permits. They're mostly building permits, decks, things like that. So if you're a citizen and you want to get a permit, you have to go to your local municipality to get certain kind of permits. But then if you need other kind of permits, you got to come see us in the P&D office. So for several years, Andy Bueller has been working with the municipalities whereby we can take over some of the municipalities' permitting functions, and it's Brighton, Randall, and
Paris.
So we're going to take over those three where we will issue certain types of permits. So any residents in those municipalities have a one-stop shop. And whatever it costs us, we charge back in fees. So you have CC $50,000 in expenses, $50,000 in revenue, so there's no real increase. We think that on an annual basis for these three municipalities, it'll be $100,000 worth of, so we have just a half a year in. So we've started talks with these people, we'll continue those talks, and hopefully by the middle of the year, we'll have it set up. Some of the work will be absorbed by Andy's folks, but the people who do the inspections, that's a hired firm. It's not a Kenosha County employee. There's inspection firms that'll do that. We will hire that, pay that, and get the money back in fees. So the other increases in this budget, there's the personnel increase, and then there's an increase in fixed expenses, which I think is liability insurance. Then you flip down to the revenue side. Our land and conservation fees will be flat. Our permitting fees, this year is kind of a low year, so next year we expect it to go up to $85,000. The Summers revenue, we have a contract with Summers revenue to provide their planning services. We have budgeted $50,000 for this year. We will not attain $50,000. The number will be closer to $35,000, which is what it was last, similar to what it was last year. So we decreased that revenue budget, and that's this year we carried over some revenue from last year to pay for some planning services that Andy was doing. And if you go up to contracted services, we also carried over the expense into that budget from 2020. We just weren't able to do things last year because of COVID, so we carried over the expense and the revenue into 2021. And when you go into 2022, the contracted services for these planning will actually go down a little bit. So in total, the levy goes from 566 to 608, and I think that's it for the operations side of planning and development. Any questions?
Does the committee have it?
Good.
Any questions from the committee? Supervisor Murray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hey, Jim, on the Randall, Brighton, and Ferris inspection front, so are they still carrying inspectors then if they're going to have everything come down?
Hired guns.
I'm sorry?
Hired guns, third-party inspectors.
They're going to all be third-party, and you're just going to pay an inspection fee then for them to inspect, which the county won't get because it's going to be between them two. Okay. And this is supposed to start 2022?
We hope to start in 22. Yeah, we talked to everyone. Brighton had a little bit of a problem because of Sue Crane. She had a family emergency. Otherwise, we might have started that a little bit. But I think we can get it together for those three municipalities in the first 6 months.
And when you say hired guns, is it each of the municipalities are going to hire their own? Or you
no, there's an outside inspection services, a third party, a company.
So does
that. And we hired to do that. And we collect the fee and pay them.
Oh, okay. So it's still
a third party.
It's still a one stop shop.
Yeah.
Got it. Thank you.
I just can't remember the gentleman's name, but we've had discussions with him, and he's all for it, and the municipalities are all for it. So, and the citizens will benefit with a one stop shop.
Now, John?
What is a decrease in summer's revenue based on actual experience? Can you unpack that for me a bit?
We signed a contract with Summers, the village to provide planning services for them. We thought we were going to get $50,000 in revenue. We're only getting $35,000 from them. We're just not doing as much as what we thought we would.
So actual experience is just what actually happened.
Yeah.
Anything else, John?
Nope.
Okay.
So in operations, that's it. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to go into capital, but okay. I'll go ahead, whatever you want me to do.
Well, is that all for planning and development, or you want to
That's
go
capital? That's all there is for operations and planning and
okay.
development.
Okay, then continue,
Page
please.
7 is their budget for capital. There's one project. It is the South Pike River project. Now, we've done several open houses and meetings on this project. If you flip to the next page, actually, pages 8 and 9 are just some summaries, four different slides from our presentation. On the top of page 8, it shows a map. The South Branch is what we're talking about. And this project is not the entire South Branch. It's the part of the South Branch that basically goes from 60th Street to Highway S. The river flows north. That's about 1.2 miles. It's about half of that branch. The North Branch that comes down from Racine, they've pretty much done this. They spent the last 10 years working on this project. I don't want to repeat everything we did in all these presentations. And then they adjoin up right by Hawthorne Hollow or by Highway, right by Pets where Highway A hits. You see that beautiful wooden bridge, and that's where all these things come together. And then it flows through Pets, and you know we've been working on, we got a couple projects already done in Pets. We got another one coming up next year and the year after, and then it flows all the way down into Lake Michigan. So the list of the project goals, there's a lot of environmental things, reduce flooding, reducing erosion, improves water quality, improves more fish. There's the rusty patch bumblebee. There's all kinds of really cool things. Plus, we'll put a path in on one side of, rusty patch bumblebee.
Okay.
So endangered species. We will save the rusty patch bowl.
Okay.
Thanks for showing us your softy side, Jim.
And I knew you'd be interested
in
that.
I am, very much so. Touching.
Yes.
Thank you.
And then on page 9, there's the timeline. For what's in the budget for next year, it's purchasing land and starting the design work. The land's about $2 million. We had a meeting just the other day with Army Corps, and we wanted to make sure that they were on board with this. They had 25 people on the phone. And Andy and I, and they went through that it's a federal thing because we're getting $10 million from the Army Corps. And so they ran through all their lists of approvals and told us where they were at, and everything looks this timeline where if we spend the $2 million to buy the land next year, and then after that there's planning and there's construction, and then there's a project budget there, and they confirmed that this number is a good number for the total project. We've already spent some money on design, and we got a grant. But the way it works, we're supposed to, the non-federal sponsor, which is us, puts up $6 million, the Army Corps puts up 10. And any money we can get, and we feel pretty confident that we don't have any firm grants right now, but once you tie the Army Corps to it, people tend to want to contribute money. So we've explained all this stuff in a lot of our other presentations, but if you guys got any questions, now's the time to ask. Dave Giordano's here, Andy's here, and so that is the one capital project, Public Works, or Planning and Development.
Any questions on Planning and Development? Supervisor Frederick.
I just got a question out of, for my own. What? How do you treat stormwater? It says store and treat stormwater runoff. How do you treat stormwater? What do you do?
So, Dave can do this a lot better than I, but I'll give you the Reader's Digest version. You know I won't.
I think going to Dave will defer.
So the best example, Supervisor Frederick, is if you look at, if you're on Highway KR and you look north, Pike Creek, the north branch coming down, you'll see how that changed when Mount Pleasant did. There's a very narrow creek bed. The original creek bed has been restored. But more importantly, they flared out the land adjacent to the creek bed on both sides so that when there's this big flood event, instead of all that water rushing down, eroding everything, tearing stuff up and causing all kinds of issues downstream, that water now can rise, float out, and be stored in those grasslands that are adjacent to both sides of the river, and then it slowly seeps in and slowly goes back in. So all that water gets treated, and it doesn't degrade the environment downstream.
Just curious.
So
thanks.
Fair enough, Dave?
That's beautiful.
Okay, thanks.
Wow. Not that long either, but it's pretty good.
I'm working on it.
So I can just add, we're looking at approximately 150 acres of new wetland that was original wetland before it was farmed and ditched and burned. There's a Purdue study that if you do an acre wetland a foot deep will hold approximately 330,000 gallons of stormwater. Multiply that times about 150 acres of new wetland, there's about 50 million gallons of additional flood storage with this project. It's pretty dramatic.
And we are going to, I don't know if I mentioned this, we're going to put a bike lane in that kind of runs next to it. So, and it's another connecting part of the bike lane in Kenosha County. So we're slowly but surely connecting all the stuff.
John?
So it sounds like basically what you're doing is getting more land around the river so that less of the storm water and flooding ends up downstream and you can kind of disperse it over the local environment.
Correct.
They're building a moat. Any other questions from the committee?
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. In many ways, in my view, this is almost like taking sow's ear, making a silk purse out of it, so to speak. When you have highly erodible land, it's always subject to the uncertainty of, will my property flood? Will my home flood? Will my business flood? And when you have that type of uncertainty, people don't want to necessarily build by it. They can't build on it because it's a flood area. So it's happened in Racine County, Mount Pleasant. Dave can speak to this as well. It's actually become land that is now more valuable because now it's out of the floodplain. You can actually build closer to the edges of it. People don't have to pay flood insurance anymore for their homes, and potentially you can add more to your tax base because now some of that land is developable, if I'm saying that correctly, where previously it wasn't. And you get the Army Corps of Engineers to pay the lion's share. So that's why most people look in to say, yeah, that's going to work.
Supervisor Nardigan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Speaking of that, if it's already deemed flood, do we have to then get new flood zone maps made after we get this all taken care of, like we did out in Camp Lake?
Yeah, I believe that's exactly what happened. Yeah.
Okay, and then it takes a little bit of time, but you have to finish the project to get it going. So, okay, thank you.
Anything else, Supervisor Nardigan?
No, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Then we'll take planning and development as a whole. Can I have a motion?
Motion to approve.
It's been moved by Supervisor Kubicki.
Second.
Seconded by Supervisor Juhas. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next division we'll talk about is facilities. Starts on page 10 of your handout. This is a big section in your book. Facilities, what that includes for our budgeting purposes here is there's a downtown campus, which is all the buildings that are here, and it also includes the KCDC and the adjacent building, their storage facility out there. It includes KCC and all of our highway building. And the reason we call that the Civic Center is because of the other two chunks of facilities. One chunk is the PSB. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
One chunk is the PSB, and what the expenses that we incur for the PSB, we bill about half of it goes back to joint services or the city. So we track that department separately. And the other separate department is the job center, because we keep track of the expenses there for custodians and utilities. And we have a lot of people who rent space from us over there, so we charge them back a percentage, well, pretty much all of it gets charged back to our customers. So that's really a no levy division within facilities. So there's job center, PSB, and a civic center. We add it all together. It's on this page. If you want to see the totals here broken down for 2022, we included that on page 11. And we put the page numbers on here because it gets a little confusing from the going from the budget book, because there's so much data here. Now, from a budgeting perspective, we kind of look at it as one big lump, because there is some budgetability to, if approved, to move money from one division to another. But the main reason there's the three departments is because PSB gets billed back, Job Center gets billed back, and everything else comes into this Civic Center. So kind of flipping back to page 10, if I can talk about the whole thing aggregately, then if you do have any specific questions in these individual ones, we can chat about it if you saw anything in the budget book. But the total increase here in the levy for the facilities division is, it's $102,000. I'm just looking for the percentage here. It's a 2.8% increase in their total budget. And when you look at page 10 of the 100, there's actually an increase of $32,000 in expenses. Of that, $129,000 is in personnel. There's decreases in some of the other areas that offset this, mostly in contracted services. We're not going to do as much of that, where we have to have outside consultants and do work for us. But the personnel, as I mentioned on the first page, there's one new custodian that we want to hire. And this year we've got 31 people in here. We wanted 32 is what we want to get to. Back in 2010, we had 32 people. So we've actually been down since 12 years ago. Despite the fact that when you look at the square footage or the extra area that facilities has had to take over, we added the fleet maintenance building over here. We added the building out at KCDC for storage. We've done a bunch here at PSB. We did a whole floor. Plus, back then, it was just when we were opening up the other part of the PSB. And we now have two towers that are part of what they need to maintain. And we have this rental income area here where they have to do the snow. So there's about one, in the county, I think we have about 1.2 million square footages of buildings. And this is, it's like 100, somewhere between 120 and 150,000 square feet we've added. So, and we've also, the 31 people that we have includes a HVAC guy, and an electrician, which we didn't have back then. We've now brought them in. They're our employees. So that's saving money and on the outside. But it's just gotten to be too much. In order to maintain all this additional area in the way it should really be maintained, we're hoping to get approval to hire another custodian. And this person will kind of come in sort of at the starting level and learn various jobs within the county so they can maybe move to different places. But this will bring us up to a level where we think we need to maintain all of our facilities the way they should be. So when it comes to expenses, the biggest increase is this one person. And the other thing I'll talk about as far as on the personnel side, we did a job, yeah, got to thank Human Resources for this, because they went out and they did a job comparison of market rates for custodians. And our custodians, the starting level for a custodian was, I think, was about 50, it was less than $16. So they were in an NE1, which I don't know how familiar you guys are. That's the lowest non-exempt level we had. So this includes taking those people, and there's like around 20 custodians out of these 30, maybe a couple extra, and moving them from an NE1 up to an NE3. So their job grade is moving up to, and that's a buck and a half an hour or something. So we're having a lot of problems. First of all, you got to track them, and we've been trying to hire people, and they're just not lining up for a job that kind of work for under $16 an hour. And then you also have to retain the ones that you got. So by moving this job grade, it'll help both attract and retain these people who maintain all of our buildings. So they did that, and the new custodian. So between rate bumping it and adding a new person, that accounts for just about all of that $129,000 worth of personnel. As far as, I'm sorry.
No, it's just for showing out pits where you can sit.
Okay.
Apologize for disrupting.
No, that's fine. We're going to budget down utilities a little bit. We budgeted up. We're actually saving some money and utilities, so we took that down a little bit based on actual. Our building equipment maintenance, we're raising that up a little bit based on our actual experience. And building insurance is just a number from the supplier. So when I talked to the city people and the joint services people about their increase, we're doing all this and increasing the fee to them only by 1.4%. Which they were very happy with. So that is pretty much the operation side of facility. One extra person, 2.8% increase in a levy. Any questions on operations for facilities?
Committee, any questions? I struggle with adding positions. So the custodian. We're falling behind. What is the actual need rather than want in this situation?
So I would say there's a couple things. So as Jim outlined, we added about 165,000 square feet over the last 10 years. We didn't add any bodies. Typically what happens, there's a calculation.
How much does one custodian cover?
So the one custodian that we're talking about adding would specifically be added to third shift at the PSB. That's the most difficult shift. We've got three 24/7 buildings, Brookside, PSB, and KCDC. Those have human beings in them, so we got to maintain them 24/7. The most difficult building to maintain is the PSB, and third shift's the most difficult one to attract and keep people on. But that's where Mike wants to bring the person in, be on third shift. What it's going to allow him to do by having that person there, it's going to give him a lot more flexibility to cross-train the rest of the staff and be able to float and have a little deeper bench. It's not unusual to have somebody go out on A&S or get injured or be on vacation. And when those things occur, right now, given how much square footage we've had and some of the real estate that we have to maintain that we added in the past 2 years, we haven't added any resources to do that. We're just at that point where Mike's done a heck of a job from a, we've implemented lean manufacturing techniques over the past 3 years. Mike's shop is the one that really embraced it. So there's so many processes that have been leaned out and improved, and that's really what's allowed us to get this far without having to go back to the 2010 staffing level. But he's just, he's at that point. Right now, when he misses a person on ANS, or if he's at two people on ANS, he is scrambling to make sure stuff is covered in those 24/7 buildings. So that's really why we want to get out of the crisis management kind of business, so we can keep maintaining the level of quality that we've had.
And one other factoid which might help understand a little bit, we've averaged over the last 4 years, 17, 18, 19, and so far in 20, or excuse me, in 20, not including 21, $86,000 a year in overtime.
Really?
For these positions.
Okay. For custodians?
Yeah.
Positions?
For facilities division, which is mostly custodians, yes.
Okay. And this will help alleviate that?
Should definitely help.
See, that makes me feel better.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. Okay. Thank you. Supervisor Juhas.
Jim also has cleaning procedures changed with the current situation that we're in. I mean, things are taking longer to clean.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I could talk forever on this, but I'm sure. We went to a new philosophy, new supplies, a whole new program of cleaning all the buildings. There's a methodology and a better follow-up. So yeah, well, COVID and has you have to do extra stuff. Anytime you have a meeting, you gotta close the room and go back and do it, so clean it out, so yes.
Any other questions on that portion of this part's presentation? Okay, you want to move on to the capital portion?
Yes, sir. Page 12, I think it is. Kind of a lot on this page, but it's broken down again into the same kind of chunks. Top part is the Civic Center projects. The middle section is the safety building projects. Then there's a human services building. Then way at the bottom, we have this section called capital projects. So I'm going to cover just a couple things, and then you all have seen and had a chance to look at this. I'll let you ask some questions. But the capital project section on the bottom, HVAC replacements, we've got 100,000. We always have to replace something every year. We do not know what's going to crap up, but I guarantee you something will crap up. If it does, we've got some money set aside. If we don't need it, we don't spend it. Then we'll know when it comes bonding time whether we need that. As far as in the middle section there, the safety building, we have to replace some gas pumps, and then the $113,000 is just for miscellaneous doors, carpeting, washroom remodeling. Each of the divisions has $100,000 or $200,000 of a real detailed list of capital items that we need to do. So is anything underneath the top part there, under the facilities division, do you have any questions on any of that capital? And we'll save the human services building questions for last.
Supervisor, you have?
Jim, a couple years ago, the HVAC for KCDC was taken out of the budget, correct?
It's back in. Oh.
It's back in now. What is the cost difference from 2 years ago to now?
Excellent question, Supervisor Juhas.
If with the latest, we're in phase two right now of that, Frank, correct? Or phase one? Phase one of the rooftop unit replacement at KCDC. So that's been delayed in effect 2 years. I'm going to say, without getting super scientific, it's north of $1 million greater cost.
So we cut out how much out of the budget 2 years ago?
So $500,000.
And we cost the taxpayers an additional $500,000 by deferring that 2 years.
Yeah, I'd like to get exact numbers, but that's probably pretty good.
Close to that.
I would like, when you...
It's more.
When you get that number, I would like you to share it with the entire board.
Okay. Yeah. You
so people understand when we defer things, that there's a cost to it down the road, and the taxpayers ultimately tend to forget about this 2 years ago, and supervisors tend to forget what they defer, and then it comes back in the budget, and we're costing the taxpayers more money down the road. Thank you.
Jim informed me I'm very conservative in my estimate.
I didn't forget, by the way. Just so you know, I remember that vividly, that vote. Mm-hmm. Okay, continue on, please.
So is there any other questions in the Civic Center part up there? That's the $2.2 million for next year. Okay, then if there's no questions on anything else on that page other than if you go down to the Human Services section, there's building improvements for the job center. That's miscellaneous repairs. It's the only thing we have in the budget for next year, except for there's a lot on the corner of 85th Street and Sheridan Road. It is the southwest corner that we have in the budget to purchase for $115,000.
Are you going to sell Christmas trees there, Jim?
We were thinking about adding that to the repertoire, but decided
it's got a revenue line.
Yeah. And the next line down is the job center renovation relocation budget, and we have $800,000 for next year and $500,000 a year until it. We've done a lot of explaining on this and had town hall meetings, and we have a rep from Fair here. And the plan is to remodel the building we have, or what we're planning in the budget is in 2029 purchasing the building from there in the Sun Plaza. In the timing of this, the next year, the $800,000 would be planning and design. And then after that, the next year or two, 18 months, they would build it. But Bayer has to own this building for 5 years in order to get $4 million worth of credits. And then after 5 years, they can sell us the building. And that comes out to the middle of 2029, which is off this map. But that $500,000 and $800,000 is the rental lease payments we would have to pay until we would purchase that building from them in 2029. And any of the other financial numbers, I'm going to leave to Patty and Barna, but that's what's in here. Did I do that right, Barna? Patty? Thank you.
So, Mr. Mills, what... how is...
Oh, this is Craig. It's not...
No, he's here.
Oh, he is?
Here.
Oh, he is.
Jim. Jim. You got to know your audience.
Jim, I'll take care of it, Jim.
I know. Okay? I'm sorry.
You gave me a heart palpitation, like I'm losing my mind. Yeah. So I'm looking at him, so... Okay. So, you're comfortable with what's going to happen with the building that we have now? Because that is in my district, and I know that I spoke to you previously about not wanting that to be an eyesore or deteriorate while this is going on. So you're comfortable with this whole plan and how this is going to play out?
Correct, we are. And what we'll do is we will purchase that building from the county. At the point in time, the county would vacate that facility and then move into the new one.
Okay.
So it wouldn't be in 2029, we would do it significantly prior. So. On our timeline, 2024.
Okay.
And then we have a lot of time to work on a plan too.
Okay. I just want to make sure that that doesn't fall by the wayside. No. So.
Sure.
All right. This is being recorded. So. Okay. Thank you. Continue, please.
I just want to know if there's any other questions on this page or that project or any other projects on there.
Any other questions? Supervisor Nordigan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the plan is for Human Services Building to spend, well, $115,000 is obviously the lot, but the building improvements and the job center and then the renovation, $843,000. What's the value of that building right now? What was the appraised value? Was like 1.8 million or something?
1.6.
1.6.
So we're going to spend roughly another $843,000, but we're not going to get the value out of that. It's still going to be $1.6 million, correct?
No, I think you're thinking...
Supervisor Nordigan, the $800,000 is going to go towards the new
building. Oh, okay.
So that's not going to be poured into the old building.
That's what I wanted to find out, because it just said job center renovation and relocation. So I didn't know which. So that's for the new building.
Oh, correct.
Got it. Thank you.
So, no problem. So the $43,000 is to do some of the stuff. Yeah,
right.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. No problem. Any other questions? Did I see any other hands up? Okay. Okay. You're done?
No.
With this one. Have any questions?
This is the facilities.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
This is the facilities portion.
All right, yes. I'll make a motion to approve.
It's been moved by Supervisor Juhas.
I'll second it.
Supervisor Franco is seconding. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously.
Okay, we're going to go to golf, and Chris is going to take over and talk a little bit, but there's two things I want to say before I get started. Number one, we've had a couple of very awards this year. The huge one, well, I don't want to take away from golf, but with the AAA thing happening, that's a big award.
What did you hear? What did you say?
The county, in case you hadn't heard, Supervisor Gentz, the county achieved AAA status from a financial...
That's awesome, isn't
and
it?
It's great.
Okay.
And that's thankful to everybody. But there was also another award that Pets Golf Course keeps winning year after year after year after year after year, and that's the number one golf course in Kenosha County. So I don't know how many years we got in a row. Is it ever since they've been giving it, I think?
Nine
years.
And if I can add, right now is we're the fourth best municipal course in the state out of 60.
Wow. Keep up the good work. Yeah. And Jim, next time for effect, a little AAA on the forehead would be good.
Yeah,
That was a nice lead-in.
I'm sure there's other awards. Brookside got an award for the best in the state, too. So we've just got all kinds of awards.
Don't forget that.
Just a wordy kind of award.
Right, Bob?
So, Chris, do you want to sit here, or do you want to do it from yours? Why don't I just do this?
Thank you, Supervisor.
I'll just move over.
You're a heck of a guy.
I'm trying to... I don't know how to use a wheelchair.
All right. As you all already know, golf is a levy neutral. I prefer it that way.
Yeah.
It's a levy neutral division, so it's budgeted as such. Jumping right into the salaries, those are the scheduled increases. It's an increase of 33 grand from this year to next. There is an increase in that as well for the pay rates for the seasonal. They'll try and retain and get new employees in for those. The contracted services, we've increased those based on the maintenance contracts and the credit card fees. This year and last year, golf has seen just an explosion of volume and play. Along with those comes the fees and the maintenance to upkeep the course and the credit card fees. And hand in hand with that is also the sales tax that's paid on that, which is one of the fixed expenses that you see a large increase with. A lot of times we get asked, why are we budgeting at 3.1? If last year we came in at 4 million and this year we're projected to do the same, we budget this at our expense level. We're not budgeting the profit. But if revenues do exceed what our budgeted expenses are, we're also able to increase expenses for capital or operating, but not to more than one half of the level of our revenue. So we don't want to deplete everything, just going crazy. We keep half put aside in case of bad years or extra projects that we want to do going forward. And that's pretty much the operating side. If you guys have any questions.
Any questions on the operations for golf? Supervisor Nordigan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Last two
years, your $4.1 million in actual revenue, and I guess I understand, you know, if you were not expecting that and it came about, but this year your revenues are $1 million less than what you've done in the last 2 years. Is that just, you know, just a shot in the dark number, or is there something you guys are seeing, whether that we're not, or?
No, like I said, we budgeted at the expense level, so this is what we're planning on spending. We're not going to budget it at a profited level.
Okay.
So the numbers that you're seeing below are what are actually coming in and what we're forecasting to come in, not necessarily what we profited and spent.
Well, using that same then ideology, you're $1 million more revenue this year than what you budgeted for this year, 2021.
Right.
I don't know what you budgeted for in 2020, but I'm going to guess you're another $1 million over, and now you want $434,000 to borrow. Shouldn't you have that money just from the excess revenue?
Yes, so
do you want to touch on?
We're not borrowing $434,000. We're planning on bonding for about $200,000 out of $400,000.
My mistake, you're bonding $217,000. So, wouldn't there be an extra 217? So I know you haven't had a small amount left over in reserves from previous ones. I mean, it seems to me you easily have $217,000 extra that you're on the bottom.
Yeah, what we're attempting to do is, there was a master plan developed for the golf course in terms of capital improvements 10 years ago. And we've been pecking away at it. We've done irrigation improvements. We still have irrigation improvements yet to do. We've got bunker restoration. There's a bunch of things we have to do. And we know going forward, it's not likely we're going to be able to bond for those big seven-figure events. So what we're consciously trying to do is, as we do have these good years, we're trying to take some of those revenues that do exceed our expenses and put them away so that we can build up our reserves so we can fund those capital projects, those bigger capital projects, without having to bond. So it's really being done with that kind of strategy in the background. So that's why we're not trying to empty out the reserves every year. We're trying to build them up.
And I understand that. But I think then you have to stop using the term levy neutral, because the golf course is not paying those bonds back. The residents of the county are paying that bond back with the borrowed money that we have to pay back every year. We're going to be somewhere around $19 million you got to pay back that year. That comes out of the taxes. So I would highly encourage you to stop using the word levy neutral. If you're borrowing money and you're not paying it back, you're paying it back.
Yeah, I think it's fair to describe what we're doing as the course is operating in a levy neutral position, but our capital investments that we're doing are not 100% funded with operations.
The levy's coming out, right?
What's that?
What we pay back in bonds, wherever they are, bonds or loans, comes out of the same pot of money, comes out of our taxes.
Yes, you are correct. Right. So,
okay.
Right.
Thanks. Okay. Just a point. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Any other questions, comments? Is that
capital? I mean, we've tapped into the capital, yeah. Okay. If there's any other projects that you guys want to discuss, you want to
add? Go ahead.
Well, do you guys have anything in particular? Otherwise, it's relatively small.
Any questions, concerns with that?
Mm-hmm. No.
Motion to approve.
Second.
It's been moved by Supervisor Wambolt, second by Supervisor Kubicki to approve the golf portion of the budget. Any further questions before we move on? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We'll move on to parks then, which this year's proposed levy increase is 3.4%.
Pardon me? What? Speak up.
Parks, the proposed levy increase for next year is 3.4%. A large portion of that is in the personnel. There's annual increases as well as the new parks position, which I don't know if you want to discuss at this time or discuss afterwards the new parks position.
If we can run through the rest of the operations, right, and then Matt can give you a good detail on that.
Jumping down, there's a in the seasonal wages, there's a decrease based on historical data. This is based off of not the hourly pay, because that is still an increase, but just on the overall number that we're historically spending. We're bringing it down to meet what we're typically seeing. The building maintenance supplies, due to departmental needs and historical costs, which also includes some of the new park features and amenities with KCBMP and what's going on at Petrified Springs. There's just increased expenses that go along with maintaining those buildings, as well as the parks themselves, which is the next line down in the other operating supplies. And the fixed increase is just the liability insurance. That's the quote that we get from our insurance. If we jump down to the revenue, the snowmobile is pretty much flat. The parks donation is flat. Large increase that helps cover a lot of this is the parks revenue. This has a lot to do with the Silver Lake entry fees that were adjusted due to COVID. We're still seeing a large influx of patrons, especially out-of-county patrons that are coming in and using the park facilities, and this park's revenue reflects what we're seeing.
Okay, I have a question on that. I mean, Marna, are you comfortable with that number being increased by that amount? Or whoever does it? I mean,
our actual was 260, wasn't it?
Yeah, we're currently sitting at about that number right now.
All the parks revenue.
Yeah.
Yeah. This space, go ahead.
Yeah, it's all a lot of the Silver Lake entry fees, like I said, all mixed in with the pavilion rentals that we're still getting. And this number we've seen 2 years in a row. So assuming that we don't have this huge drop off, this should be a good number.
Okay, I just wanted to hear the background behind it, because I just don't want to increase revenue without a rationale behind it. Thank you. Please continue.
That is all that I have for parks operating outside of the new position that I don't even want to hear about.
That's true.
So I will reflect that over to Matt Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As far as the new position for the Parks Division, this is a special project coordinator.
Can you scoot up and take the mask off?
Yeah. Sorry about that.
No problem. We're all family here.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So specifically for the new position for the Parks Special Project Coordinator, we really mirrored this off of the success with the Facilities Division that have also a Special Projects Coordinator to really try to keep things in-house whenever possible, so we don't really have to outsource any of our facility maintenance for the Parks Division, grounds maintenance, small project improvements whenever possible. And also these small projects that we do have to outsource, there's a robust array of them that I personally have to take on, but it'd be nice to have someone else do small scale project oversight, similar to what Facilities has. And as many of the committee members know, the parks have just grown tremendously over the last 10 or so years. And even running numbers for Petrified Springs Park, what I came to is back in 2014, we had 589,000 visitors. When I ran the numbers for what we're projected for this year, we're gonna be at 1.4 million within Pets Park this year. We reached 1.3 million just last year alone. When you talk about Silver Lake Park and their attendance, we raised it by 28% from 2017 to this year alone. So obviously our parks are growing, there's a lot more visitorship, and with that comes the maintenance, improvements, and the upkeep of that stuff. So it's really imperative for us to keep that quality of services for our end users. And then on the other side, the park activities and events. Back in 2010, we had less than 10 special events a year. Now we have over 200 events each year. So we go from 10 to 200.
Wait, in what time frame?
That was back in 2010. So about 11 years. We went from 10 events to over 200.
That's huge.
So now on top of that, also our acreage increased. With Kenosha County Veterans Memorial Park, with the improvements that we made this year, 150 extra acres that just got developed this year. And then we have a partnership with UW Parkside, where now we open up to the general public another 148 acres. So our parks are also increasing. And that's where the need is.
comes in.
See, I can understand that need. That's huge.
Thank you.
To answer your question from before, the parks, they're projecting $270,000 in revenue for that one line item. So they're increasing it from $165,000 to $250,000. So that's a legitimate increase.
Okay. Any? Supervisor Uhas.
Matt, I would just like to say your department has done a fantastic job getting people into the parks with all the activities. I participated in yoga in the park, the food trucks. I know there was Woodstock out in Bristol Woods. Everyone is going out. Everyone is getting back to nature. They're getting back to normal life. And you guys have done a great job getting the community to come out and use the parks. And I hear over and over, I didn't know this existed. This is wonderful. And it's maintained and it's well kept. So great job.
Thank you.
I can't even argue.
But, can't argue with success.
No, I can't. I can't. I've got nothing. But can you talk about the savings in outsourcing? Because you did mention that, and that intrigued me. What did you mean by that?
Absolutely. We have a fairly young staff right now. There's been a lot of retirements with our superintendents over the years. And with that, we really lost a lot of in-house capabilities. I was just commenting to Ray with John Rudy, what he was able to learn on the job. That's a thing of our distant past, but we need to revitalize that institutional knowledge and what we're able to actually grow and expand internally. So with these young employees, they have a willingness to do things in-house. They want to learn, and we're going to have them for many years to come. So we're able to cross-train with the highways division, for instance, to do grading, development, and landscaping. That the more that we can do in-house, we want to try to minimize the other operating levy wherever possible by having that cost savings. It'll take a little bit of time, but hopefully year after year, we don't have to outsource those things, and we'll be able to hopefully do them more and more in-house, and that's our ultimate goal.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good job. John?
Just a finance question. When we talk about like the revenue, that's the money that's expected to come in, and so the danger there would be overestimating how much money we actually have. And then
okay, thank you. Okay, so you want to talk about capital?
Yeah. There's a decent amount of projects that, I shouldn't say projects, but equipment and projects that we have listed here. I don't think it's necessary to go line by line, but if you guys have any questions on any specific projects, we can answer that.
Was there any at committee? Was there any problem with this?
No. It all.
I will just make the statement that for these capital outlay projects, regardless of which department we're talking about, we did essentially go line by line on these capital improvement projects. So it has been vetted to that extent. We'd encourage you, please, to ask your questions while you're here this evening.
I have a question.
Pardon me?
I have a question in the committee.
Okay. Any questions from the committee?
Go ahead, Supervisor Dawson.
Matt, can we get an update on Senator Baldwin's efforts for the Kemper Center revetment law?
Yes, absolutely. We did hear back. There was a request through Senator Baldwin, this is the backstory, for potential grant funding through the federal annual budget for Kemper Center revetment, the lakeshore, all the rocks in front of the lakeshore. And we were anticipating to receive 75% grant funding through their annual budget to help with the revetment repairs, and that's what's presented in the annual budget. Through that appropriations committee that Senator Baldwin sits on, unfortunately that didn't make it through this bill cycle at this point. But coincidentally enough, we had members of our administration in D.C., including the county exec, that was able to talk directly through Senator Baldwin. And she has this as top of the line for other opportunities. So even though it might not be with this opportunity with the federal government through their annual budget, as we all know, there's other opportunities through the stimulus bills that are going to be put forth over this next year, maybe next month or so. So it's still advantageous, even though that might not have been an opportunity for us at this point.
to receive that direct funding through the federal government. There is a lot of opportunities in the near future to still get that revetment done, because what they're looking for really is a shovel-ready project, and they need that that 25% from the county if this is going to move forward. So it's still advantageous, even though it might not have gone through with this federal appropriations at this very point. We've been very successful in other grants, other capital projects, to have these line items ready to go.
Thank you. I think it's important. We don't want Kemper falling into the lake. So it should be a top priority.
And if anyone's been down there, even over the last couple days,
yeah,
we got walloped again, where there's debris all over the place at Kemper Center. Yeah. And even with the lower lake levels, it's still detrimental, where we lost a lot of land again just with this small northeastern. It's only a matter of time before a multi-use path falls back in again.
And if we don't fix that portion and the city fixes the surrounding, it's detrimental to the surrounding neighborhood.
100%.
What's going on? What's
we're talking about the Kemper shoreline, and if it isn't a priority and doesn't get fixed, if it isn't scheduled, we don't find money for it through appropriations. That should the city fix on either side and we don't fix Kemper, then it impacts the whole neighborhood. And vice versa, the city, vice versa.
Did Supervisor Juhas, did you have your hand up? Mm-hmm. Supervisor Kubicki, did you have your hand up? Okay. So basically what this is we're keeping this in here, assuming that we're going to get some type of money, and if we don't, we won't bond for it.
That's 100% correct.
Okay.
Placeholder.
And point of information. Just to understand the revetment project, it is not solely for Kemper, it would be from the northern boundary of Kemper down to Kemper boundary, including Anderson Arts Center, to the county properties, full extent there. So it's not just a piecemeal thing; it would be the entire stretch.
1,000.
Yeah.
It's 1,450. It's 1,450 feet of lakeshore. Is what that will entail. 1,450 feet of lakeshore. You want to be specific.
Exactly.
Yeah, a foot or two up or down.
All right.
Depends if I had a good day or not.
Pardon me? Do you have your...
Yeah.
Supervisor Frederick?
So we're assuming we're going to get revenue, but we don't know. So is there an alternative plan if we don't?
In my mind, no. We don't really have an alternative. We need to
that's going to have to be taken care of somehow. And if we don't get grants, we can't just let it going to the lake, right? So I guess that's the concern I have, although I can't control it, but, and there's no alternative plan, so I don't know where we go from there.
Well, when you get the 25 Army Corps of Engineers on the phone, have that conversation. Anything else from the committee? I believe he's covered everything, capital and the operating, so.
Move to approve.
It's been moved by Supervisor Juhas.
Second.
Seconded by Supervisor Wamble. Any further questions? Supervisor Kubicki.
I'll be voting in affirm, but I'll excuse myself from anything with Kemper due to the fact that I'm the executive director. Abstaining from that portion.
Okay. Anything else from the committee? Having a motion, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you.
Okay. Move right into highway. The levy, as we can show on the second page of the pamphlet, it shows at 0.1%. It's actually, spam the digits, it's actually like 0.03%. We're talking about almost nothing. If you look at the revenue levy line, $539. moving into the expenses, which we will come back to in more detail later, did a large increase, $346,000. This includes the annual step increases, some market adjustments that have been made for the non-exempt employees, as well as succession planning, and the new engineer position. Included is medical insurance also. This is decreased based on the individual choices. This is older employees with families retiring and moving out, and newer single employees coming in. The interdepartment personnel charges, this shows an increase based on the succession planning. The other professional services, there's an increase in new road construction and project consulting. It's no secret that there's a lot of construction going on in the Kenosha area. This is just to help cover that and the future projects of what's happening. The miscellaneous contractual services, we've decreased this, and that's based solely on the gravel crushing. And I believe the last two budgets, we've had funds in there to gravel crush and keep at the pit, and we now have a good quantity that will last several years, so we don't need to have those funds available. The machinery and equipment has increased. This is simply the needs of the department. The shop superintendent tells us what equipment he needs for the next year, and we put that right into the budget. Other operating supplies, this is increased workloads. Again, not only are we doing more work within the county, but we're also doing more work with the townships. You'll see the revenue has been projected up $100,000. A lot of these extra funds in the expense line are covered from those funds in the revenue line. Fuel, we decreased just based on historical data. Other roadway supplies have decreased slightly, again, just based on historical data. And the material inventory, we've increased this. What this is our salt. We keep our sheds fully stocked, and then we have our budget for the next year for our winter, whether it be heavy or light, we keep it full. And we've increased this because the price of salt has increased. It's gone up $2 a ton, so we've accounted for that in our budget. Jumping into the revenue side of things, we have the ARPA funding of $90,000 that Jim talked about earlier. A huge increase that is helping cover a lot of these expense increases is the local transportation aid. This is a number that's given to us and computed to us from the state. They take into the expenses in the construction and the new projects that are going forward, compute a number, give it right to us. The state revenue, we realize that we budgeted too high in the previous budget, and we brought it to what we actually, the numbers that we're seeing previous years. And we'll jump back up to the salaries. I know you're going to want to hear about the new engineer position, and Ray will let you hear about that.
Yeah, so so those of you that aren't familiar with the highway department, 50% of our engineering staff is here tonight. Clement. So we actually have a total of two engineers.
That is a quality piece.
Right. So there's two engineers in the department. And over the years, we've pretty consistently now, in the last, I'm going to say, 5 years, if you look at the projects that we've got in progress from kind of inception, concept, to actual construction taking place, man, we're north of $70-plus million worth of projects. We're doing it with two guys. Clement is, I'm not going to say what his age is, but Doug is a younger guy that we have has come incredibly far in the short time we've had him. Bottom line is, we're never going to establish like a 20-person engineering staff. That's just not how we're going to operate. We're going to operate the same way we do now, which is very lean, where we make use of specialized engineering contracted services for bridge construction and specialized projects that we're doing. We're going to rely on outside help for doing the detailed technical pieces of those projects, but we need horsepower internally to project manage those projects. And right now, between Clement and Doug, we're stretched really, really, really thin. And us having the ability to have a senior engineer in place that can assist with some of the project management, because the projects aren't going away. The development that's occurring and the things that we need to plan for to accommodate the economic development, which is all good stuff, but we want to accommodate it, we want to stay ahead of that, and our ability to manage those projects, that's what the senior engineer, that's one of the biggest pieces it's going to bring to the table. The second piece is they also will be able to do some engineering of specific projects too. But the biggest bang for the buck is really their ability to help manage the number of large projects that we've got going on and still maintain a small but very powerful in-house engineering staff. So that's basically what we'd like to do.
Supervisor Juhas?
Ray, can you talk about how many miles of road is in Kenosha County and how many municipalities Clement and Doug are working in on a daily basis?
Yes, I can talk to the, I'm going to defer to Clement for some of the lane mileage details, mm-hmm. but yeah, he just came, he was late, we tried to catch dinner tonight, all of us, before we came to this. Clement couldn't make it because he was dealing with there's still Highway S issues with some of the folks there wanting to get special things taken care of. He was over there, and he was, you know, so he was dealing with stuff in Summers on a daily basis. Lots of good stuff happening in Pleasant Prairie, obviously, mm-hmm. economic development-wise. Bristol has economic development now that rivals Pleasant Prairie and Summers. There's stuff happening in Paris / the city of Kenosha. There is the city of Kenosha. And there's actually stuff happening in Salem Lakes as well. The village industrial park out there is taken off. All of it impacts the infrastructure, and these guys are getting pulled and having to deal with all of those things. And I think we've got a good relationship with all the municipalities. I believe that, and that is a large credit to Clement and his staff, because there wasn't always necessarily a really good working relationship, but I think whether it's the town of Randall or the city of Kenosha, everybody's pretty comfortable picking up the phone and talking to him and knowing they're going to get answers to what they need. We want to keep that going, especially as these economic development issues continue. The worst thing to us is when we're working with a developer, we try to respond to those guys very quickly and make sure that we are the ones that are not holding up the train as these projects are coming through the pipeline. So as far as the actual lane miles?
Yeah, I just would comment only on county lane mm-hmm. miles because that's what I have on top of my head. I don't know off the top of my head the villages and towns. At Kenosha County, we have about 253 center lane miles. In terms of lane mileage, it's about 511 lane miles. And just to add to what Ray is saying, that the other component that is a little bit very demanding but very silent is our municipal service requests. So we respond to municipal service requests. And also, as we continuously build these facilities, we also have to maintain them and keep data. So in the past year, working with Ray, we tried to improvise, we used interns to help us manage and collect those data. And as we keep progressing, it's kind of a moving of the life project. And we're hoping that next year we'll now work with IT to making them all digital, kind of get a digital footprint for all of our facilities. So okay, all of those things are very time consuming. And so for us to work on those things and at the same time work on the project is a little bit daunting. So if an extra hand, an experienced one, will go a long way to give us, to give us an ability to maintain the high level of service at which we are right now, or maybe make it better.
And how often have you had to outsource because Doug and Clement are so busy that you have to hire like R.A. Smith, or you have to hire Strad, you have to hire an outside engineering firm to help pick up some of that that work with consultant services, contractual services.
Yeah, we rely very heavily on outside services, mm-hmm. and I don't want to give the impression that we're going to be able to dramatically cut that back.
Right.
As Doug does. Doug did the engineering like for the Brookside parking lot. Mm-hmm. That all the enhancements and the road improvements and stuff, Doug did that project. He's done
parking lots.
There's other projects. So there's things that we're doing that those smaller projects like that that we do want to do in-house so we don't have to contract for that. Because those kind of smaller projects, if you have to contract for engineering services, as a percentage of the overall project cost, it's pretty substantial. And if we can do those smaller projects like for Matt's operation, Dan's operation, some of the stuff in facilities, if we can do those in-house and then still do the project management, we get the best of both worlds.
Okay. I will tell you, I work in engineering for the Village of Pleasant Prairie. And when I came on the board almost 4 years ago, when I spent my day, I was shocked that there was just Clement, and I believe Doug was in engineering and training at the time. He didn't even have his PE.
Right.
So you had one PE running all of Kenosha County, and Clement had Doug working as an engineering and training, so he can't stamp plans. He was very limited. Clement was working a lot, and I know in the village with the two engineers that we have and me, that's our whole department, and you guys know what's going on in Pleasant Prairie. There's a lot of work, and I'm going to support this addition because I've seen firsthand what's going on at the county with all of the construction. You have UC, we're looking at roundabouts, you look at this, you look at the projects that are coming forward, and I know Clement can't keep going at the rate he's going, because we all know when you work employees, you can work them so hard, and they're...
Well, don't say that while Clement's
here. I just know professionally, with the relationship I have, because of where I work, I know what they're doing. And this isn't a request that shouldn't be honored. So that's what I have to say.
Supervisor Frederick.
I'm looking at this capital outlay, okay? And I'm looking at local road projects. Is that us contracting with the towns to do their roads?
On the capital side, no, that wouldn't be.
What that is, that's the local road improvement program, we get money from the state of Wisconsin to help pay for roads. This specifically is Highway EM out by Twin Lakes. And we're going to get it. Generally, we budget about $600,000 a year, and we budget to get half of it back. And sometimes we don't do anything, so we'll just kind of bank the money. But what's in here is enough to finish off that local road, Highway EM. I think the design and stuff is next year, and the construction is in the year after that. So we get money from them every year and from the state underneath this local road improvement program in order to do work on one of our local roads.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to skip through a lot of this and just get to the bottom line. Is that, correct me if I'm wrong, we're bonding $9,586,000 and we're going to get revenue by bonding that of $12,552,000, am I right?
Yeah, so the total project would be...
So if we don't bond, we get $22 million of improvements, but if we don't bond the $9.5 million, then we can't do the... For some reason or other, the bonding didn't get approved or whatever, then we would lose that extra $12,252,000, and in turn for that, you would be a downward or effect where you couldn't keep your employees employed because you don't have those projects, am I right?
Jim, is that a fair way to describe things?
That's close. The major part of the bond, half of it, is for our own county roads.
I mean, we need to do this bonding in order to get that revenue.
Yes.
But if we don't get the bonding through, then we don't get that revenue, which is $12 million, and we're spending $9.5 million, and we're going to get $12 million bonding revenue because we're doing that.
Yeah, the one exception I would say, Supervisor.
And the point is that if we don't bond, these projects don't get done. Roundabouts don't get done. none of this stuff gets done. So if we don't bond, we don't get that. The highway department would in fact not be able to keep everybody busy, am I right?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other committee questions? So, I was going to ask how many engineers other counties have, but I don't even have to go to counties because we have a supervisor on board who just told me what one of the neighboring has. So Pleasant Prairie has two engineers and we have two engineers for the whole county. Okay. Ray, you said that we're really, really, really thin. I was looking for four reallys on that instead of three. Also, you didn't mention our AAA bonding.
Okay, so yeah, and our AAA bonding.
And Clement, we have some pizza since you missed dinner. So I got everything covered. Any other questions or comments from the committee? Anything else that they need to present?
The only other thing is the last page, really, 19 and 20. You can really go to page 20. These are the smaller departments, divisions that really have almost no levy impact. The only one that really has a levy impact, 9/11, that's the call center. That's $40,000 worth of levy. And then there's another category there called downtown rental properties, where we conservatively budget rental, where the rental income for the few buildings we rent down here exceeds our expenses. And any of that money, if we do make money there, it is goes back into our civic center capital fund to buy buildings and things down here. But basically, there's no levy there except for the 911 center. And that's the end of our budget.
Supervisor Gashke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In addition to being a AAA day, I believe it's also a birthday, if I'm correct. And I can think of no better way to celebrate a birthday than by presenting to us tonight. Jim, am I correct in that? Did I hear correctly that it's your birthday?
Yes, thank you very much for that.
Yeah, so thank you for celebrating with us tonight, and thank you to you.
I couldn't think of a better place.
Hold on, let me get my boots on.
Except some bar, maybe some.
Okay.
Can I just ask about the reconstruction of the bridge on Highway JV? Like, what's the process like?
So, where that's at right now is the engineering, actually, which is done as we speak. We plan on having the engineering done by December, and then we'd be in a position to go out for bids for that in January, assuming the budget passes. And then we'd be able to start the demolition work prior to, like in the wintertime, probably we do it in February, March, and have it ready to go so that the deck could be reconstructed as soon as the weather was warm enough to do it. So that would probably be realistically May, June-ish is when that would happen. So that's the kind of the schedule for that.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions or comments from the committee? Okay, I'll be looking for a motion on highways. It's been moved by Supervisor Frederick.
Second.
Seconded by Supervisor Juhas. Any last questions before we close debate? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That passes unanimously. That concludes the public works section.
Thank you. Hey Jim, happy birthday, buddy.
Can we take a break?
If it's okay with the committee, I'd like to take a 5-minute, 47-second break.
Okay. Sounds good.
This was wonderful.
Everybody's life for all their communities.